Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. And this is a bit of a short notice impromptu live stream, but it is kind of a necessary one because over Christmas and since, there's been a huge debate regarding immigration on social media, prompted by two factions in the Trump coalition. The first one being J.D. Vance, who, despite having an Indian wife, is very much in favor of curbing H-1B visas to the United States. Ironic, but we'll take it. And then the other side is Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, who are best known for being part of the Doge in the upcoming Trump administration, but they are also tech entrepreneurs of sorts, or is Vivek
biotech or pharma? Okay.
Closer to that direction, but in any case, you have some divergent views here on what the problem and solution to the certain issues going on in American labor shortage, or American labor, not really a shortage, going on. And this is a pretty interesting topic, and I think I'm personally more qualified to talk about this than most other big EVA types, for sure, and mid-EVA types, definitely. Like, I don't think people like Owen Strand have ever held a job before, but I actually work in IT by trade, by day. So my day job is working in IT. So I can talk to a lot of the issues at play here, which I'll get into more later on. But I also wanted to talk about a big EVA article that was written, and it's promoting amnesty, despite the fact that Trump won with a popular mandate of mass deportations. So I want to dive into that first because that came first, and then we're going to talk into the more H-1B part of this debate. So I don't know if you have any opening thoughts on what's going on.
I mean, overall, I think this whole Twitter debate is actually a very positive development and an inevitable development as well. So it's both positive and it was always going to happen because this rift has always existed. And I mean, the common perception, especially from a lot of detractors, is that like MAGA sold out to Elon Musk. But what you're seeing online right now is that MAGA did not sell out on immigration to Elon Musk. And the other thing is Elon Musk is trying to change the narrative. He's not in the driver's seat when it comes to the H-1B issue. He's on the defensive. So those are some positive developments. And I think we should actually, you know, this is a good time for some white pills for a lot of people.
Okay. Well, I do like to keep it positive and be a jolly warrior, even though a lot of the news that we cover is negative. You know, we got to look for God's providence in a lot of these things. So, you know, we got to just stay in the fight. And there is a perception that, you know, because the Nick Fuentes of the world, they basically said we can't trust Trump because of this issue and because he's going to screw us on immigration. However, Trump was going to win anyway. I think that's pretty clear that Kamala Harris stood no chance of winning. She was a terrible candidate and did worse than Joe Biden did. And Hillary Clinton also, I think. Could be wrong on that exact math, but yeah, because he won Nevada. So yeah, she did do worse than Hillary Clinton. So with that said, these little online debates weren't going to change the fact that Donald Trump was going to win a resounding victory against Kamala Harris. This is the part where we, as people who showed up to the election day, then voice that vote as leverage for this issue. That is how politics actually works, is that you reward and listen to your supporters. You don't listen to the people that are holdouts. They don't really have leverage. And there's some good people that disagree with me on that, but I actually think this is the time. This is when the fight actually begins, and this is when the fight needs to be had on immigration. So, yeah, we wouldn't even, if Kamala Harris won, we did win, we wouldn't even have the luxury of having this conversation. I think you also kind of alluded to that point. But first, I want to talk about Big EVA and their reaction to the Trump election in light of the immigration question, because they have their own thoughts. So this is an article by Richard Land. It was published last Friday, the 20th. Richard Land, if you are unfamiliar with him, he was the head of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. So this guy, I believe for around 30 years, since like 1989 to 2009 or 2013, something like that, he was in charge of the lobbying arm of the largest Protestant denomination in the United States of America. How did he do? Well, we're going to read this article, and it's going to speak for his record, because if you're wondering why the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission was an, you know, ineffective lobbying arm to promote and advocate for Christian policy, well, Richard Land was head of it for a long time, and it'll show why the Southern Baptist Convention is the way that it is. Russell Moore and then Brent Leatherwood, each getting more liberal, did not fall far from the Richard Land tree. They were the successors to him in not just title, but also legacy and movement. So this article just exemplifies that. And this is a guy who talks about a lot of things about Donald Trump and winning. And he says, under President Biden, the non-enforcement of our immigration laws reached new heights of non-enforcement. In fact, the Biden administration, with the collaboration of sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, raised non-enforcement to variable artes form. So he's trying to do the whole border security thing. But ultimately, he's going to be advocating amnesty. So he talks about his record. He's been involved with several attempts to bring about serious immigration reform. Most recently, in the President Bush's second term, suggested several lessons that must be heeded. So he's saying that we need to learn from the Bush administration's second term, which was a disastrous second term for the reason that George Bush was a left-wing president. And his second term really showed that. If you look at his economics and his Medicaid expansion, stuff like that, it was a very left-wing term. So he says, first, the American people will not accept immigration reform that allows significant numbers of people, such as Dreamers, to stay unless they are convinced that the federal government is going to control the border. Control means we decide who comes in and who goes out, and we have verified who they are and where they are. Controlling the border does not mean closing the border. We need immigration to keep our economy growing, but in controlled numbers of people with skill and without criminal record. So there you go. This is the first part. This is going to be one of the main points of amnesty in this article, is he's going to be promoting it for the so-called Dreamers. Now, Dreamers, as he explains, is a deferred action for childhood arrivals, is an Obama-era MET policy that was completely unconstitutional to create a separate category of person who's invaded this country. That is a separate category that Obama just invented. It is a distinction that is functionally without a difference. Those people are not Americans, nor should they become Americans, but he's going to be advocating full pathway for citizenship for these people in particular. But we'll get to that. Your thoughts on his premise about what Americans will stomach or not?
I mean, it doesn't really matter what was true in 2006 or 2008. It's not the case in 2024, where this is a global issue. This is not just American politics. This is, you know, this is in England, this is in Germany, this is in Norway, even like even a lot of these like traditionally liberal European countries are dealing with the same question about immigration, because immigration is unpopular wherever you try it. So the idea that, oh, well, Americans have this stomach and they can only tolerate so much. I actually think most Americans are probably indifferent on the DACA question, and they'll just go wherever the winds go. And obviously Trump tried to use DACA as like a negotiating tactic. But at the end of the day, the Democrats don't care either, because they'll either ram it through via the executive order on amnesty, or they'll just, you know, keep the problem going so that they can campaign on it.
So this next paragraph that I want to read is one of the only times that he tangentially makes a biblical argument. And he says, the principle at work in DACA is that we normally don't punish children for their parents' crimes, and the parents are the ones who broke the law by bringing their children to the United States. The children did not bring themselves. I just got to say, in response to this paragraph, why would we reward the parents by letting the children stay here and send them money back in their own countries where that money has much more buying power?
Or sponsor their eventual immigration legally.
Yeah, chain migration.
So it doesn't, I mean, it's entirely a moot point because you're saying that deporting someone that doesn't belong here is innately a punish, is innately punishing the child for the sins of the parent, but it doesn't really matter because, you know, they shouldn't be, the children shouldn't be here either.
You're punishing the nation that, and you're punishing, you're basically also advocating for family separation, which is like a big sticking point with a lot of liberals and squeamish people on the immigration question. You know, they're like, family separation's wrong when you process people at the border because these human traffickers claim that these are their children. And I guess some people want to have people have the children next to the human trafficker because that makes sense. Instead of, you know, proving it first before you have the people together. But in any case, Richard Land here is inadvertently arguing for family separation. Deport the parents, don't deport the children. And I'm not here for that, but that's just me. And then he says,
literally the worst thing that'll happen to the children is they grow up in a third world country. I mean,
then he says, second, those who are on the left wing of the Democrat Party and the right wing of the Republican Party who would rather have the issue to campaign on than have a solution to the problem to pass meaningful reform, there will have to be a bipartisan coalition of middle right and the middle left. And again, he says that right now, this is the right moment for that.
There's no such thing as the middle left unless you want to call out the neoconservatives that are in support of the Ukraine war. There, it just doesn't exist. There's no moderate Democrat.
Yeah, you know who the most moderate Democrat in Congress is? Last time I checked, it was Ilhan Omar. She has the most moderate voting record of any Democrat in Congress.
Yeah, but even if you take, Manchin's no longer going to be there, but yeah, Manchin might have been good for like thwarting bad bills that the Democrats were trying to pass, but he's not necessarily going to be a team player when it comes to
Republican bills. Well, he's gone.
Even though he's gone, but still, you're dealing with Murkowski in Alaska, Susan Collins in Maine.
Mitt Romney.
Oh, he's going to be gone too, but like.
Okay, I can't keep up with all this, all the rhinoceros. In the Senate. So this is where he gets to his suggestion. He says, okay, so he's already advocated that that the Dreamers get a full pathway to citizenship, which I think he's going to reiterate. So he says, what should we do? So Richard Land argues, I would suggest that we pass legislation that gives those in the United States illegally 3 months to come forward. So you got 3 months, register, undergo a background check, pay a fine, and apply for legal status. If they have been law-abiding residents, both here and in their country of origin, if they have paid their taxes, if they have been productive members of society, they would begin a 10-year probationary period. If they stay out of trouble with the law, pay their taxes, and demonstrate that they can read, write and speak English, they can earn permanent legal status, not citizenship. And then he says the penalty for having entered the country illegally is the forfeiture of the opportunity for citizenship. If they desire citizenship, they would have to leave the country, apply for reentry, and begin the legal process anew. So what are your thoughts on his amnesty proposal? And that's what this is. And he's going to object to the term amnesty, but we're going to come back to that in a second.
I mean, it's amnesty.
This is absolutely amnesty.
It's amnesty that the illegal wouldn't even apply for because it's not advantageous to do that. And that's before you get into the whole, well, they could argue that they do pay taxes because if, you know, you fraudulently fill out like an I-9 form that an employer accepts, even though they know that the I-9 is fraudulent, but the government, they can maybe get use some loopholes to prove that it's not fraudulent. But that's how a lot of farmer, like those big ag companies, will operate to get like the tomato pickers or whatever. So yeah, they might be paying taxes into the system, which is to some extent why the IRS tolerates it. But yeah, I mean, it's, you're not actually offering a carrot to the illegal other than the threat that they're not going to be deported. And that's before you get into the, what counts as a criminal record that's deportable, because DUIs are not, might not even be a deportable offense, even though they should be. Because that's like the number one metric of whether an illegal is going to commit another crime or not.
Yeah, I mean, and certain countries, especially Mexico, don't really have any qualms about drinking and driving. Just saying. I mean, we're going to talk about a lot of certain stereotypes in this stream. I think it's just going to come up. But that being said, I am remiss because I forgot to mention Richard Land is an executive editor over at Christian Post. So he's gone on to SES, which is Southeastern Seminary. I forget what the SES stands for, but that's a seminary. So he went on to there. So I don't trust that seminary that would hire Richard Land. And then he's also has the Land Center, which is where Dan Darling works. And that guy is an absolute neocon shill. You're talking like the two biggest Ukraine shills in evangelicalism are Richard Land and Dan Darling. So Richard Land is an executive editor at Christian Post, which is a pretty sizable Christian news outlet. So I'm remiss for not mentioning that earlier. But anyway, yeah, this just denotes a very low view of citizenship entirely, because he's saying that these people can have all the benefits of citizenship, except they can't vote and they can't serve on jury duty. That's basically what Richard Land has reduced citizenship to.
Yeah. But again, no one would take that offer because they're not going to want to pay the fine. I mean, just on that alone, they're not going to want to.
He's basically saying the illegal alien can buy amnesty. They can buy it. There's a price tag, and if they don't pay the price tag, he doesn't say anything about rounding them up.
Or I mean, he had
3 months.
But as soon as you make that kind of offer of, oh, here's your 3 month window, well, guess what's going to happen in the future? Another window opens.
Or here's the other thing: the Democrats will crowdfund a pool of resources to pay the fines.
Yeah.
So the Democrats will buy the permanent, the legal status.
Yeah, they'll do the George Soros BLM protest. All that Antifa money goes towards
Blue is going to have a new charity set up that is going to sponsor all these people, and now we're going to overload the system even more. So it's just such a bad deal. You're going to allow amnesty to be bought.
And presumably you'd have an administrative judge, which basically goes back to the problem we have right now is we can't adjudicate all the bogus asylum claims. So now you're going to have another judge set up a court date to adjudicate all these bogus amnesty offers. I mean, he hasn't actually thought through what his policy is. He's just, throwing darts at a board.
And what happens when these people have babies? Are they going to be citizenship, or are they going to be natural born citizens? Have you thought any of this through?
No, but because he just wants to appear moderate.
Yes. So this is Richard Land continued. Someone object that this is amnesty. It is not. Amnesty is what President Carter granted to those who dodged the draft during the Vietnam War by leaving the country. President Carter let them come home with no penalty or fine of any kind. I would have let the draft evaders come home, but I would require them to spend 2 years working in veterans hospitals taking care of young men who took their place.
And that's why the draft won't work if America ever tries to do a draft. Then you'll just run on a president will just run on pardoning draft dodgers, because that's a base to vote. That's a voter base.
Yeah, the other thing is that the draft arguably costs the United States more meaningful victories in Vietnam. The Apocalypse Now movie kind of talks about that. You need morale to fight. And when you have a bunch of conscripts, they're not going to believe in the cause. So it's not a good practice unless there's a cause that's universally agreed upon. But if you have such a cause, you won't really need a draft. But anyway, well, I've already established that this is amnesty with extra steps. He's just calling it not amnesty, but you're giving these people no real penalty other than they just have to buy amnesty. You're giving them amnesty for a price tag. And that's what he's doing here. There is not a real punishment here. I wouldn't even call this a slap on the wrist. You're just begging the left to set up an organization that's going to fund all these people's sponsorships because they know that the children of these people are going to be a reliable voting block when they are, you know, they are doing the liberal dilemma to themselves. They are not having kids, or, you know, via certain contraceptive methods like mifepristone, or they're grooming their kids. They have the liberal dilemma that's curbing their birth rate at a staggering rate, and the Republicans are having way more babies than them. So this is their only chance. This plays right into their hand by offering them an olive branch, offering them some sort of demographic salvation in the future. It's a long-term play, but again, the Democrats don't have a long-term strategy. They are exhausting their, except for immigration. That is their only long-term strategy, is immigration. And the next part of this is a sob story. And I'm not going to read that because it's a meaningless argument to me. We can talk about how many dreamers committed a crime or anything like that. Like, it's, you got your sob story example and appeal. Yeah, I mean, to
we a got a bunch of dead. Fallacy. We have a bunch of dead women.
Yeah.
Yeah. Including one that just got burned alive on a train car.
I'm sorry. This guy, Jamie Cockshua. Yeah. He can go back too. Him and his family. I'm also of the mindset that if you marry an illegal immigrant, you should go back too. You know, deport the whole family. Like that to me is renouncing your citizenship. That is, you know, what was it in Band of Brothers? Was it Band of Brothers or yeah, was
Band
it
of Brothers where they showed
them. Where they shaved the heads of the women that slept with the Germans?
See, we can, you know, denigrate the Nazis in a positive, or at least the women that slept with the Nazis, right?
Yeah,
We can do that.
Yeah, I mean, again, there needs to be that level of patriotism in the United States. If you marry an illegal, you get deported too. I'm fine with that. To me, that's, you're aiding an invasion.
I mean, who did she vote for? I mean,
so with that said, this is where he goes into more boomer con points. Like it gets bad. Like it, we are getting full throated proposition nation. We should be grateful that so many people in the world want to come to America. However, if we allowed everyone who wanted to come to America come, we would soon find that our country would resemble more the countries of the immigrants are coming from than the country we now have. There is a limit to how many people we can assimilate into American society within a specific time period and still maintain the uniqueness of our society that acts as a magnet for people across the planet. So, yes. Is change America fundamentally, but slower is his argument here. And then he says, as we urgently work to implement immigration reform, we must pay most careful attention to the ending disastrous abuse of adults and children by the drug cartel. So this is his appeal to human trafficking, which, you know, he's incentivizing here with this 3-month window of come into the country, then report, and then, you know, buy amnesty is basically what he's incentivizing. So this is the end of the article, by the way. And he says, finally, we should remember that all of us are descendants of immigrants, unless we are Native Americans. And all the immigrant groups that have come to America have enriched our culture with their unique contributions to our vocabulary, music, cuisine. How much more vibrant is American culture as a result of fellow Americans, for example, of Irish, Italian, Asian, Polish, and African American origin. So this whole premise is just absolutely asinine.
Yeah, yeah. You're America, supposed to lose your culture for the cuisine, well, you know?
He just talked about America being a place that assimilates people, but obviously what he's saying is that's not exactly the case. And I get it. Ethnogenesis has some fusion elements in the backstory. I'm completely aware of that, and I don't necessarily begrudge that. But there is a point where, first of all, America was not founded by immigrants. We were founded by colonizers, settlers, conquerors, pilgrims. I'm missing any major group, explorers.
Yeah, they're the real Native Americans. The Indians, yeah. You know, the feathered Indians in this case, because we'll probably be talking about the other type later. But, you know, they're not Native Americans. They're whatever tribe they belong to, but they're not native to the country of America. In fact, they weren't even citizens for the longest.
I'm just going to say, because it needs to be said, if you're fascinated by human geography, as I occasionally am, how do you not build an incredible civilization with the natural resources on this North American continent? Take a look at the Mississippi River that has like 10,000 navigable miles.
I mean, America has like...
It has so many navigable miles in the Mississippi River. How can you not build an incredible civilization with this?
Well, America has most of the world's like waterways like that, fresh waterways. And that's because of the Mississippi. But even still, I mean, like when you look at like the Aztecs and the Incas, because I think the most habitable range of population is like Mexico to like, I guess, what would be the Inca Empire. So that's like the most habitable lands as far as like the best climate and temperature and all of that. So, but even still, that's why the peak civilization is like, you know, the Aztecs or the Incas. But even still, yeah, I mean, the population that existed in like North America, like the United States proper, as we describe it, could have been as little as like 4 million people at the time of Columbus, and then 40 million overall between North and South America. So very low population density.
Yeah. So he continues and he says the genius of the American melting pot is that e pluribus unum, out of many one, is what that means in Latin, is true, and we can all be proud of our immigrant origins, celebrating our various backgrounds as hyphenated Americans, understanding that we should put an emphasis on the right part of the designation hyphen American. We should not, which is not based entirely on any ethnicity or origin, but on allegiance to a revolutionary set of principles and beliefs set out in the remarkable Declaration of Independence. Again, how much of the Declaration of Independence is actually revolutionary, or was it a codification of ideas that have existed for a long time in the English culture? You got to look at things like the English Civil War, Magna Carta.
I mean, it's also important to note that there's a difference between, I guess, what would be the preamble declaration and then the actual planks and grievances against the British. Because, yeah, the opening intro is very much Enlightenment, liberalism.
Right.
You know, very much that Lockean and Rousseau. Self-evident
that all men are created equal is not the main idea of the Declaration of Independence. That's not what the document's about. The document is about the grievances and the abandonment of the colonies by the king and also really Parliament. Because if you look at the American Revolution, they actually hated Parliament, not necessarily the king, but because King George III was an Enlightenment king, he viewed himself as the guy who carried out what Parliament enacts. So he believed in a very low crown authority in a time that Europe had much higher crown authority.
Yeah, I guess they were looking for him to intervene against Parliament, not for...
Yeah.
But I mean, then you go forward like 10 years to the Constitution. The Constitution isn't necessarily, you know, it's a lot more rigid in its ideas. I mean, is Richard Land going to talk about what the preamble of the Constitution talks about with, you know, for ourselves? And, yeah, what does posterity mean? I know it's not an everyday word in the English language, but it only has like one meaning.
So, yeah, people don't understand the Declaration of Independence because they think that the preamble to it, the first line, is the main idea, and it's not. And then he says, we must always remember that America is still the only country in the world, not based on blood or ethnicity, but on allegiance to America's founding principles. Anyone, anybody can become an American in a way that someone cannot become a Frenchman or a German or a Japanese.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Oh, man, that's just Proposition Nation cringe that he ends with.
Yeah, meanwhile, all those other nations, Bill, maybe except for Japan, are basically saying, yeah, these immigrants can become Germans and Frenchmen as well, or Englishmen. So, you know, even European nations are going full Proposition Nation because there's no limiting principle to liberalism.
Yeah, once you view your nation as an idea, you've basically reduced it to nothing, really.
Economic zones.
Because how many Americans, sports team. Yeah, how many Americans actually believe in the America's founding principles? They don't, like I said, they don't actually understand the Declaration of Independence. They don't actually want the Constitution of our founding fathers. They don't want that. They want the Civil Rights Act. They want the 14th Amendment onward, which imposes, you know, Bill of Rights onto the states, even though the states had much stronger constitutional protections at, in many cases. The Americans don't want the system of government that the founding fathers had. And again, I'm just going to be real.
And he's absolutely,
but most Americans don't.
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely wrong. It's not based on blood or ethnicity. It actually is when you look at what the immigration laws of the founding all the way up until 1965 were. And it was pretty much whites only immigration, which is also what Winston Churchill believed in. So
you're not allowed to point out that Winston Churchill was not nearly as cringe-tastic as the people who really champion him are today. Not allowed to point that out.
So technically, yeah, the people that wrote the Constitution, founded the country, were the early presidents of the country that we, you know, put on our money. Basically all agree that, you know, America was a place for European descendant peoples.
And just going to add a step further, Protestant at that.
Yeah.
Which I think does play into the Protestant Catholic question does play into the Mexican-American War, because Mexico was founded to be a distinctly Catholic nation, and look how well that turned out. Just saying. And yeah, I'll just leave it at that. It just, look how well that turned out. So with that said, we can now shift gears to the H-1B question. So I'll kind of give my opening thoughts. I work in IT, like I said, so I work in a company and I was doing the math last night with my wife. I was trying to count like how many white people work on the project that I work on. And I counted maybe 9. And I don't know what the total number of people is. I just don't. But that is a minority. And let me tell you, some of the people that were working are more, they're in IT, but they're not really the IT people. So, and I'm counting Dominicans as white. So, just to disclose how, but they are white. Spaniards are white. So, I think that's valid. I think that's completely valid. But, that being said, like, 1 of 9 white people, 4 white dudes, I counted 4 white dudes. And I don't believe they've hired a single American in 4.5 years. I was doing that. Like, I don't, I mean, it's all remote work, but I don't think they've hired a single American in 9 years or in four and a half years. So June 2020. So what do I say about that? I think I have a little bit of experience in this industry that uses H-1B visas. I have a lot of experience with this issue. And it's not even that I dislike any of the people that I work with. Some of them are actually really talented. A lot of them are average. And some of them don't even know Control C, Control V. Just saying, like, some of them don't even know basic computer short keys or shorthand keys for a keyboard. Or Control F search and stuff like that. So they might know all these other things, but, you know, it's like the engineer that can't tie his shoes. But then you got some pretty brilliant minds that can breed this stuff. I don't have an IT background. I was able to learn the specifics of what I do. I was able to learn that. So that also goes into why I believe we should train Americans, because I believe people are capable of learning what you teach them to do, because you already have to teach people the job. And if you teach people the job, they will do the job the way you taught them to, as opposed to an outside hire who already knows and doesn't need to listen to your training because you're hiring someone to do a job that you don't know how to do. So there's a lot of this going on, and that's sort of my background and experience into this. It's a large project that I work for, and this is between two companies, one of whom has been in the news lately. And as far as white dudes on the project, they have not hired any white dudes to my knowledge. Or maybe they hired one white woman who worked on the project previously and they rehired her for the same job. Like, that is at most. And I can only get to 9 out of at least, you know, probably triple digits of employees. I don't actually know. So I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the talk is how there's like a shortage of engineers and a shortage of talent, and that we need foreigners to do the jobs that Americans aren't up to snuff to do, which is kind of just a lie. When you look at like college, like graduates that struggle to find jobs, and a lot of these jobs are entry level jobs, but then they'll say you need X number of experience for an entry level position. And for the most part, I mean, these giant employers do have the talent networks, just from those that applied for jobs and but didn't end up getting them. Well, they have the network inside them to actually, you know, fill every slot that they need without having to hire foreign workers. But I mean, they probably hire foreign workers because there is a cost mechanism, and B, they're probably going to get a more compliant worker. And then 3 is probably some in-group preference happening from the hiring side.
Yeah, I can tell you for a fact, it wasn't Indian. It was Nepal. So just to be clear here, just to be precise. But yeah, if you were Nepali, they'd hire you. Just saying. They hired someone who was a bank teller or something like that to do IT work. Which, hey, I'm not going to begrudge, because I did not come from an IT background before getting the same job. So not going to complain about that, but they could not learn the job. But why did they get hired? Because of, you know, Nepal connections.
But we know this with the fact where, like, Bloomberg put out the study, like, last year in 2023, that, you know, 95% or maybe 94% of jobs in Fortune 100 companies, and I think they took 94 of the top 100 companies in the S&P, and they derived that 94% of the jobs went to non-white applicants. And yeah, a lot of them would have been Hispanics, a lot of them would have been, but a good chunk of them were, you know, Asian, which would include in South Asian as well. So a lot of the DEI programs that exist in large companies are basically fueling H-1B visa abuse instead of hiring domestic workers and domestic college graduates for a lot of these jobs, which are more or less entry level positions that you can find dozens of Americans to fill.
Yeah. And like I said, like the job that I work at, you could train someone to learn. And you really could.
I mean, the other thing with Elon Musk talking about how there's a shortage of college workers, I mean, keep in mind, he downsized Twitter X like 75% of the workforce and then relocated that workforce from California to Texas. So he doesn't.
He's also had mass layoffs at Tesla.
Yeah. I mean, that might be a little bit more expected for an auto.
But they're not really an auto company if you think about it.
No. Trust me,
I don't think they view themselves as an auto manufacturer. I think they view themselves as something much bigger.
But so you are able to downsize your company from a from an employee headcount and still produce quality output. And that's kind of the same way with a lot of the workers. If you hire American workers, you'll get better quality workers, so you won't have to hire as many workers.
So I mean, I think that's probably true.
And again, then the flip side is, you know, you can, there's actually a website that tracks like tech layoffs, and you'll see a lot of the layoffs that are happening are in the Silicon Valley area in tech. So they're not just technology companies, but they're tech companies in Silicon Valley, in San Francisco Bay Area. Intel is number one for 2024 at 15,000. I mean, Tesla would be number two, but their layoffs are in Austin. But yeah, Google, 12,000, Meta, which is Facebook, that's 11,000, or maybe it's 10,000 because they announced twice. And then Microsoft, 10,000, Amazon, 10,000, both of those are in Seattle. So a lot of these areas that are laying people off are also higher cost areas instead of like out in the middle, like middle America. So there's another angle that's not being explored, is that maybe the reason they can't find these workers is because they're literally working in the most undesirable areas in the country to live in, that are most expensive areas of the country to live in, rather than more employee-friendly areas that exist.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a certain demographic that might be very not uncomfortable with living in San Francisco that you can get visas for to live in San Francisco. Just saying. The poop map would not phase all peoples. So, and that's what you bring up. And this is something that we're told, oh, there's so many shortages of tech jobs and these high paying jobs, Americans won't fill them. There's a couple things that completely debunk that. One is the mass layoffs, which you just articulated. Even Tesla has had some mass layoffs, which I think is pretty relevant because that is a company that uses a lot of H-1B visas, which is public domain, by the way. You can look up who does H-1B visas and the companies like that. Another thing to point out is these things called ghost jobs. Now, no one ever you see this talked about on YouTube, but in common parlance, this has not yet ascended to the level that it should, is that what companies do is that they create false job listings that they have no intention of ever filling. They do this for a couple of reasons. The biggest reason being data mining. So they're creating a job listing to know what to expect to pay this person at a job listing. So if they put out and then they say, you know, desired salary or expected salary. So they're trying to collect information on who is paying what for this job based on the companies that in the resumes and stuff like that. What can we expect to pay people? What the competitors are paying people? They're trying to data mine with these fake job listings. And I imagine that this is all over tech. This is what LinkedIn and Indeed have kind of done to the job market, is they've created a pool, you know, they've created a fake hiring process in which companies put out fake job listings that are called ghost jobs. They have no intention of filling them. And maybe in the event that they do want to fill them, now they have a pool of applicants to get to. So the game is rigged from both ends. One, they lay people off. Two, they have job listings that are completely fake, which they can't fill. So overseas is their solution. The American worker gets screwed in both of these cases. But at least layoffs are more understandable.
Yeah, and the odds are there's at least a severance. But at the same time, I mean, you know, a lot of the companies that are doing layoffs are, you know, not to say failing, but also failing to innovate. I mean, Google isn't really as innovative as it used to be. And I mean, the days of them being innovative are gone. I mean, Intel is kind of a, you know, they got knocked off the Dow and replaced by, you know, NVIDIA, which I like. Big fan of that. And I mean, what, IBM, again, another company that's kind of known as a dinosaur.
So I mean, they've been known as a dinosaur for decades at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, fake jobs also boost the company value. Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of incentives to put out fake listings and other stuff. You know, even like the note, and the federal government has a lot of these no-show jobs, which is what Elon Musk should be focused on, not trying to mass import cheaper employees for Tesla or SpaceX. So.
And keep in mind, there's a different, I think there's even like a different type of visa system. So there's the H-1B and the, I think it's like the O-1 or the O-4. I forget what it's called, but that's your visa for like the most highly specialized talent in the world that you're bringing to America. It's like it's either O-1 or O-4. So that would be like the box Elon Musk checks as like a South African. And H-1B is just an everyday worker. You know, they're just a regular worker bee.
Yeah, and what you see if you look through the database that the United States publishes, yeah, they're not exactly all, you know, highly specialized positions that Americans cannot fill. So I saw this screenshot of like the Tesla one. It's like they got some engineering positions, but they're like $80,000 positions. Like these could be filled by Americans quite easily. These are not the highly specialized, impossible to replace positions that you really need. Let me pull up a screenshot. So take a look at this screenshot. And this is a screenshot of Tesla in the H-1B salary database. You got a materials planner, associate industrial engineer, engineering development program engineer, a little redundant job title there. Two of those, or three of those. Wow, four. So we got some duplicate positions here, all H-1B. Associate business intelligence analyst. You got a quality engineer, which is someone who does testing.
Yeah, I mean, like, so a lot of these positions, whether they get filled by, you know, an immigrant or not, they're all jobs that an American college graduate could get or should be getting.
Should be able to get in their career.
Again, Austin, Texas is University of Texas. That's Longhorns. Like, so it's not like you're short of college students to hire when you have a major university in Austin.
Yeah, and that's Tesla. So that's Elon Musk clearly trying to keep his own whistle wet here. I guess this is more Elon Musk. Elon talks about the fertility crisis, but this fiscal year, he gave 146 junior engineering careers, 100K or less. He's calling it junior engineering,
which would be entry level,
to H-1B foreigners, all from India. This is not exactly extraordinary elite 0.1% talent. That's 146 American families that all could have had children. And that is what needs to be brought up, is that I posted this in a tweet last night. People thought that the COVID lockdowns would produce a baby boom. That did not happen at all. People decided not to have kids because of the economic uncertainty that the lockdowns created and the inflation subsequently provided. So because of the economic conditions resulting from lockdowns, Americans did not have as many kids, and our birth rates have gone way down, despite the larger rise of stay-at-home working environments. And here you have excellent jobs that could have gone to Americans to help build a middle class that have been outsourced. And this is the same problem that outsourcing manufacturing did. It destroys the middle class in a lot of areas.
And keep in mind the
and so does this.
Those jobs would mainly go to male applicants, like considering it's computer science. That's a male dominated field. So again, when they talk about men falling behind, it's because their opportunities are literally being taken from them. And as was seen in the Bloomberg study, they hired 94% non-white. And these are major companies in America. For the record, Tesla was not included in that survey. And I did check. But yeah, Musk talks a lot about the baby boom. But meanwhile, his stance in favor of immigrant workers is actually undermining his desire to see fertility rates increase. Because in America, yes, the job market, the economics are real factors in why the fertility is in the is collapsing. The other part, you can't, the whole modern woman, red pill manosphere talking points, those exist too. But yes, the inability of Americans to actually have enough, money in the bank to even think that they can afford children, or to go from, maybe having one or two children to trying for that third, because, they now have a little bit more extra money in the bank. Those are the differences that the economic market makes.
Yeah, and the fact that Elon Musk has been abusing the H-1B process while laying off his workforce, that's like a double middle finger to the American people. And I get that he's not really an American, but
he's like a modern day, Lafayette, honorary American.
Okay, I'll allow that. So there's a level of lack of care in this sense. And then we also got Vivek Ramaswamy. He's basically out there calling Americans lazy. And I know you had some pretty insightful critiques of his portrayal of Americans and
value. I said that this is basically the theater kid interpretation of American politics, because he's just like, oh, those Americans just prioritize the dumb jock winning the prom queen bimbo or whatever. That's the most theater kid interpretation of Americans ever. That it's like you saw that in a Hollywood movie and that's how you interpret Americans. But if you actually think about
that, Hollywood movie being Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
If you watch the movie, who are the perverts? The nerds. Who are the more degenerate people? The nerds, and also kind of the girls, but the nerds are like the most degenerate people in Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, but again, in real life, the jocks, the dumb jock stereotype, it's not saying it doesn't exist, because when it happens, yeah, you get it. But
I've seen Last Chance U. It exists.
Yeah, but they're also at JUCO, and a lot of them are trying to bounce back, and they're not exactly
there because they made dumb decisions.
Yes,
probably. But
a lot of valid Victorians are these preppy athlete types that also are great in books. And of course, if you go to private schools across America, great academics, also great sports programs, because
Ryan Fitzpatrick graduated from Harvard, played in the NFL.
They prioritize excellence. Now again, Ivy League sports teams might not be as good as Big Ten, but even Michigan's a top tier talent in football and basketball,
and academics.
Yeah, and they're a good academic school. So the idea that schools and colleges.
Meanwhile, West Virginia is not a good academic school, and their football program sucks.
Yeah.
So, just that it goes. It's kind of and Duke is a rising football program, as is North Carolina.
Even Vanderbilt made some noise this year, and again, very good school, but not necessarily
also evil. Great. But just saying.
Well,
Vanderbilt Medical Center. Pretty evil. But yeah, academically, they have a higher standard there.
And again, the reason that athletes, a lot of athletes are intelligent people is because they excel in more than one area of life. I mean, even Trump played football back in the day.
Yeah, he was a tight end. He was a tight end. He didn't like getting hit by people who grew up in sketchy neighborhoods, which every guy who's played football understands what Trump was saying. But, you know, the media wanted to turn into a race thing because they don't understand athletics at all. But that was hilarious by Trump. And I forget what podcast it was. It was some sort of Barstool.
Yes, it was on Barstool.
But, you know, that was just a real moment from Donald Trump. So it's kind of funny that Vivek is kind of leading the charge for H-1B visas when he supposedly campaigned against that.
Yeah, and keep in mind,
are you shocked?
I'm not shocked at all that he's a mouthpiece for, you know, the PayPal mafia inside the Republican Party. And obviously, yeah, he went on the campaign trail and was pretty hard right during the Republican debates. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, he was talking dirty to you, but you know, he's kind of a prostitute and he's just saying that stuff because it, you know, he gets paid to. So, and that's kind of what Vivek's entire, you know, political strategy was, which, you know, I like the fact that he's telling me things I want to hear. It's just, you know, it's not real.
So I wanted to post this from Not the Bee. Because there's a lot of cringe going on with the in Babylon Bee world. Now, Babylon Bee and Not the Bee aren't exactly ran by the same people, but I think they have the same parent company. So, like, the personalities, though, aren't exactly the same, if that makes sense. And this guy, I don't know who is actually the guy who runs his account, but he's like, as an American with a master's degree in aerospace engineering, I can tell you there's not enough of us. My graduation at UF, University of Florida, I presume is what that means. Go Gators, right? I was literally 600 Indians and 10 Americans. The classes weren't rejecting American students. There was simply not enough supply. Now, I don't believe that. Yeah. I don't believe that they weren't rejecting American students.
Well, they have limits on who can even get into their programs.
Yeah, they have a number limit, and they choose to let people from other countries apply to American universities.
I'm sure that reflects now, the demographics of Florida.
That's not a public school, so...
Well, Florida?
University of Florida.
Yes, public, right?
No, that's Florida State.
Well, I thought that's public. Miami is private.
I think they're both private. So, but, you know... I had like a response, like, you were literally working in media instead of your degree field. Why is that? And again, that is a worthy question. He also works at Not the Bee. How many articles is Not the Bee written about colleges discriminating against white people and or Asian people?
Probably more about the latter group than the former.
I think Not the Bee is more based than the Babylon Bee is. Okay, so University of Florida is public, is what the chat's saying. I would look it up, but
I mean, that's probably right. It's Miami that's private.
Yeah, I know Miami's a private college, but anyway, who can keep up? Who can keep up? Again, you have an aerospace engineering degree, but you are not working in that field. There's got to be something to that. Did you just decide that the media was more fun and worth working in? Or is there, you couldn't advance in your career? Which is it?
In my article, I link a thread or maybe just a long tweet from a guy that's named Jay Dot. I don't know if you saw that one, but it was going around. And ironically, that was reposted by Eric Prince, who's the founder of Blackwater, which is like a private mercenary company, which, I mean, if anything, Prince should probably be Secretary of Defense, not, you know, Hegseth, but, you know, save that for a different discussion. But yeah, and it's literally this guy that, you know, he did some entrepreneurial work in Silicon Valley with tech. He moved across the country for a company, and then he's making 80 grand a year, and then he gets laid off. And he can't find a job anywhere in tech. And again, he is a brilliant guy from his thread because he actually made a bunch of money in the stock market and derivative trading. You know, he's like, yeah, I bought, you know, Bitcoin at 3 grand NVIDIA at $10 a share. It's like, wow, this guy has me jealous.
But $10 a share?
Well, it did stock split, so I'm assuming that's what he's calculating it.
Oh, okay. All right. Chat says you get a W. I presume that's on the public state. Okay.
So
you've earned University of any state is 99% public. Yeah. I mean, I know that's the case with University of Maryland, but you know, I thought Florida was different.
But yeah,
we don't have a Maryland State University here, by the way.
But pretty much, long story short, is a guy that has a brilliant, you know, he was brilliant in stock trading because he had to be, because he couldn't find a job in tech.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I'm not going to get into details, but I am trying to do a career move. So not going to get into any details on the specifics of that. Although I might, for patrons at Evangelical Dark Web, I might get into more specifics on that. Because I don't think there's a viable career path in IT. I just don't. This is Joel Berry. This guy is incredibly cringe. Managing editor of the Daily of the Babylon Bee, living up to their Babylon moniker, and also a very Judeo outlet.
They had a very Judeo Christian Christmas.
They did. They absolutely did. So Joel Berry says, "Mad about replacement? Look at America's education system, one of the most evil, wicked systems on earth. It has taught American kids to hate themselves, hate their country, celebrate mediocrity, and throw away their birthright. To the extent that foreign talent is needed and everything to keep everything from falling apart." And at this point, it seems needed, and I don't resent them in the least for it. Again, where is the need been? Where has the need been proven?
No,
they've not established that.
I reject the fact that the regime has actually successfully taught Americans to hate themselves. And yes, I know there's some Reddit tier atheists out there, but as far as like the majority of white American students that are going through the public education system and even through colleges, a lot of them don't actually come out hating America. I think the poll question was whether they view negatively the founding fathers, and the majority of the white kids did not, even though they've been indoctrinated through, 12, 13 years of public school and, 4 years of college. They still don't come out hating the founding fathers. The people that do and do think like America's founding is negative are generally minorities. So they're the groups that are most likely to already think that.
Yeah, and I also don't like the fact that we're just blaming our education system. There's a lot of things that you can blame on the public education system in the United States. The fact that the kids then go into college and then come out and can't get they can't get jobs in their degree fields is not a fault, or it is in some cases to blame on the education system that taught millennials specifically, you need to go to college or you're going to be a failure in your life. That is what millennials learn in high school and elementary school. Even I remember hearing that, and maybe Zoomers can also, partake in that experience as well. So Americans were taught this, that you need to go to college or be a failure in life. And that proved wrong because we were told, hey, you should go for these jobs. That's where the careers are needed. And yet, but there's a paradox, because when there's an opening for jobs and everyone wants to go into those jobs because they think that there's an opening, there's no longer an opening. And now there's an oversaturation of people with degrees and jobs that they were told were going to be lucrative. So we did a bad job coaching young people with the whole college question. And a lot of people have dumb degrees and a lot of debt, and they don't work in their degree field. So there are problems with the education system, but it's not their problem that someone who graduates college with a tech degree, with a computer science degree, can't get a job in computer science. Meanwhile, we're importing talent overseas to do computer science jobs that these people could have been trained to have learned and would have done better. So, I don't know if you have anything before I continue reading the
let's continue. Let's keep
the Joel Berry, because Joel Berry is Big Eva, by the way. I would consider Babylon Bee to be Big Eva. I imagine that their web traffic is even higher than the Gospel Coalition's web traffic, even though they mostly write headline level. Most of their jokes aren't very funny. Just going to be real. But they do have the occasional banger, which I will no longer promote because these guys are absolute liberal cringe. And I just can't celebrate them anymore. We have the education system to thank. Second behind that are the parents, who have dumbly marched the next generation to the slaughter by failing to parent them and putting them in front of screens, dropping them off at open air, publicly funded prisons we call schools, and neglecting faith and religious practice. Again,
that's a reference to Gaza as far as the open air publicly funded prisons. So again, he's got to make an Israeli point.
Wow. So he's got to make a pro-Israel jab there, or dog whistle, or what? I don't know what a Jewish dog whistle would be called, but he's got to do one of those. It's not a shofar. That's not it. But anyway, neglecting faith and religious practice. Like, do Chinese public schools neglect faith and religious practice? Absolutely. Is that why these schools aren't? I think people are being trained in IT. I really do. They just aren't being given these jobs. And that, when I saw on the H-1B visa thing, like JP Morgan Chase was giving these lending specialists, or was importing lending specialists, because you really need to be a foreigner to, or we don't have enough American
people Americans literally who are applying for jobs. Well, I mean, again, at a bank like that, almost religiously, because again, I was, you know, I used to be in that space. It wasn't JP Morgan, because I don't think they have a office down in Maryland. But yeah, there are, you know, big name companies that, you know, you would just boom, hit their jobs boards constantly. You know, if you're trying to get into finance, that's the thing you do.
And he says, we gave up every institution without a fight. We continued to obediently send our kids to university indoctrination camps for $80,000 per year. Again, who's paying that much for college in a year?
Yeah, we can find the examples. And keep in mind, the most middle class, like upper middle class, are like the number one college debt. But a lot of it is graduate level, not necessarily as much on the bachelor. And yeah, 80 grand per year is a little bit of an overstatement, because I think the average student loan might be around 80 grand.
Well, that's for 4 years.
Oh, that's total.
Give or take. And he says, our birthright wasn't taken away. We gave it up. This won't be turned around by you playing the victim or by bitter resentment. It will only be turned around by you refusing to wallow in the ways you have been wronged, and by you rising to the occasion. Like it or not, the world is a meritocracy. No matter how you try to suppress it or protect yourself from it, you have to live with the truth and maybe even learn a thing or two from people who aren't taking the American dream for granted, who aren't acting like everything is owed to them. Again, what does he view being American means?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's saying that, yeah, being an American doesn't mean you have the right to have, like, I don't know, the jobs that are listed for, like, Americans to apply.
In America?
Like, there's no, and that meritocracy means you must compete with a globalized workforce, even if that means your neighbor suffers so that
and
the foreigner can get your job.
Let's be real. People from a certain part of the world don't exactly know what their actual qualifications are, because certain parts of the world, they're more likely to cheat on what their qualifications are.
Well, that's before you even get into the college scene, where, you know, cheating circuits actually do exist, because a lot of these societies, and again, this would be also, you know, be talking about the Chinese, you know, they have, like, apparently that those, you know, cheating rings do exist in colleges. And, you know, the foreigners think very collectively in when they're in an academic setting, versus like American students or even, you know, Western students, which are more individualistic in their achievement.
So Joel Berry's talking about education, then he's talking about meritocracy. You want to know what country has an education-based meritocracy? China. I don't want to be like China. I'm just going to be real. Like, I don't think education-based meritocracy is the ideal form of meritocracy. It's just not. But at the end of the day, he's arguing that we shouldn't protect ourselves from this. Joel Berry is the type of guy who has advocated replacement theory. He's advocated it. He's advocated more immigration. And there's this growing view that America is a sports team and we can just sign talent from across the world to do jobs that we can otherwise have homegrown talent for.
Yeah, I mean, I think I made the point earlier today, and it was just like, yeah, you know, if America's a sports team, you know, like, why do you even care? Like, you know, it's kind of like the World Cup's happening or like the Olympics are going on. And it's like none of the athletes for your country are actually from your country. You know, if you're German and your soccer team, your premier, you know, World Cup contending soccer team is just like a bunch of Africans.
That's France, not really. Well, France. That's mostly France.
But it's just like, soccer team, what is the point in rooting for your team if they're not even your team? I mean, even like the America with the Olympics, you know, it's not exactly, you know, not exactly the same as it used to be. And, you know, that's why a lot of Americans probably tune out of these things.
I think that's one reason, but I don't know. I mostly blame NBC for having the worst Olympic coverage in the world.
But the point still stands with regards to like the you know,
with, I mean, we got to highlight like the gay figure
skater and soccer teams being like representing their country, but they're not even like of that country. I mean, hockey's not a problem, though.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some exceptions, but for the most part, I think you're right. Like, if you have to import all this talent, you're going to create a disconnect between the worker and the product in an economic sense, or the people in the country. And that is perhaps a more dangerous consequence that people don't realize. And you're seeing that in Canada. Like, Canadians are stereotypically pacifist. Yet, you know, you import a bunch of people from India to Canada, and all of a sudden, you got some Canadians that are pretty uppity, and I don't, you know, they're becoming racist against Indians, I guess. And Canada was always about celebrating how not racist we are, like those Americans down south, because part of the Canadian identity is being not America. So that's part of the Canadian identity, is distinctly not being American. Yet here they are, you import a bunch of people to Canada in a country that of like 15 million people. They can't just take a bunch of people, and that's not a country that's built to have mass immigration. They're not built for that.
Oh yeah. I mean, Canada has a housing crisis, and just like a lot of parts of America where rent becomes unaffordable. Especially like the, I guess, younger people that miss the housing, the best housing option or availability in like the last 10 years with that COVID, low interest rates, plus the actual available real estate. Now you're in this situation where rent is equivalent of mortgage because of the interest rate. So a lot of the opportunities are no longer there as far as owning a home. So, and again, you're competing with foreigners, including just regular illegal immigrants for the same properties.
Yeah, especially the illegal immigrants that are processed as refugees or asylum seekers, which is what the Biden administration was doing. We're going to call these people refugees, and now they're legal. So it's absolutely nuts what's being done. I don't know how much more there is to add to it, because I think the solutions are pretty simple. End H-1B visas. I think that should just be ended.
Well, I think there's a lot of positive notes, because this is one thing I noted going forward, is like, if you're looking at what the expectations are for the Trump administration, this is why this conversation is both a good thing that's happening, but also why you can kind of tell that Elon Musk is on the defensive here, and he's trying to change Trump's mind and change the prevailing winds rather than he's driving the car.
Okay, let's talk about J.D. Vance for a minute. He's the one championing this, and he's kind of seen as like the heritage American guy. And I think that's resonating here on this issue, even though he married an Indian woman.
Yeah, I mean, he.
Even though he did, like, all these things that a lot of people on the right would say cringe, even though the white supremacist stereotype of having an Asian or Hispanic girlfriend is, like, super real. And probably also the conspiracy theory about a lot of these followers, a lot of these groypers aren't actually white. Just saying, that's also a wide theory out there. So with that said, J.D. Vance, the guy who married the Indian lady, is also going back to his roots and saying, hey, on the hillbilly elegy part, and it seems to be the case that he is standing up for a heritage America here on this issue. And that's what I want to say, that's what set off this Christmas debate on immigration.
Well, so this is what I wrote in, I guess, the article is, you know, Trump has signified support for these H-1 visas, but it's not really one of his dogmatic positions. And if you go back to what he did in his first term, he actually did reduce H-1B visa abuse, and he significantly curtailed F-1 student visas. So that's, you know, that's how, like, the 9/11 hijackers get in on student visas. Those are F-1. Those are a different category. He reduced that significantly.
And that's also how Chinese spies get in.
Yes. Like, and keep in mind, those F-1 visas are probably subsidizing a lot of, like, American colleges, and that's subsidizing the wokeness in universities, because it's allowing these colleges that probably might actually close their doors to stay open because they can just import foreign students to replace the fact that, you know, population of students is actually going down because of, you know, birth rates.
And so, also people are, I think the younger generation is not going to college as much. You're going to see a lot of colleges close down in the next few years because I think the demand for college is plummeting. And that's why, and that's going to affect small Christian colleges too.
Yeah, I think they would, a lot of them will get the worst end of it. But,
well, I'm not that, I don't think the best ones will get the worst end of it.
But curtailing the F-1 visas also prevents those same immigrants from graduating colleges and then getting jobs, again, competing in the job market and getting, I guess they would probably get an H-1B if they have an F-1. So they would probably have to transfer the type. But yeah, that is a significant action that the Trump administration took the first time around. This is before 2020 is my data, well, at least the data I found came from. So it's not, you're not saying this is what happened because of COVID. This is before COVID.
Although what I have seen is that H-1B or immigration is basically driving most of the population growth in the United States, and it's insane.
Yes. So again, you're looking at term two. You have Stephen Miller and Tom Homan.
Homan, I think is how it's pronounced. Homan. So
they're
going to be
hardliners that will deal directly with immigration as their primary domain of policy, versus like Elon Musk and, like, I guess Sachs and some of these other guys that are probably going to be more on like tech side. And even if you look at the scope of Doge, which I like the idea of Doge because it's a way to bring about government reforms without actually going through Congress. So it's like you're basically having a committee that can suggest policy, which then bypasses the legislative branch. So there's actually a lot of good things, but again, they're not the ones going to be hands-on on immigration. And odds are Secretary of Defense, Kristi Noem, is probably just going to be a secretary that, you know, takes the order and
fulfills Secretary it. Of Homeland Security.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. But yeah, Kristi Noem's probably going to just do whatever she's told, even though she has more of a Chamber of Commerce background, but she'll probably just do what she's told. So if you're looking at what the expectations are with regards to Trump, the marketplace, and this would be like the liberal media, they're expecting a clampdown from Trump on H-1Bs and even legal forms of immigration. And that's what Musk is trying to change. So if you're looking at what the market is saying, you know, kind of like if the stock market is expecting a rate hike or a rate decrease, that means when the, you know, chairman of the Fed announces the rate change and it doesn't go according to plans, then the market really freaks out. But if it goes according to plan, then, you know, all is basically normal for the day. So Elon Musk is seeing what the market is expecting, and they're expecting the clampdown. He's trying to change that, and it's not working.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the actions of people, and that kind of determines whether they're winning or losing. So that's a good way to look at it. I'm going to do a last call for questions because I kind of want to wrap this up. I don't want to be too long. And also, Formos and Black Bear with the absolute comment that just, yeah, I'm going to own up to it because it's true. Most IT jobs are connection based anyway, no longer based on any meaningful qualifications. How do you think I got into IT with no IT background? It's connections, and I'm not ashamed of that. And I got promoted after a year of working in it, and I work for a different company than when I started, not because of career advancement, but because, you know, you migrate like a wildebeest sometimes. So those who know, and you know, if you work in the industry that drives the Maryland economy, you know. Are there any H-1B seasonal jobs in Maryland for the fishery industry? Is that HB1 or is that H2 or something like that? I'm
not too familiar with that because.
Like, don't the hotels and other industries have a slightly different categorization, H-2B visas, stuff like that? And the government's very complicated with its forms, letters, and alphabet soup. So I'll do last call for questions. In the meantime, if you like Evangelical Dark Web, do also subscribe to the channel. If you are new, smash the like button on the live stream. I think that helps with live streams. The biggest thing is new subscribers. That is the biggest thing at all to boost a video or a channel. Winning Not Winsome is my book, 10 Commandments of Spiritual Warfare. I do and probably the most outdated thing, I do compliment the Babylon Bee in this book. Might be the most outdated thing that I might disavow, but otherwise I think it aged pretty well. I do talk about, you know, things like Judeo-Christian label. I talk about building companies and building divest and build is the last chapter in the book, it's the 10th chapter in the book. It's very pressing for the times that we live in, and you should check out the book. It's linked in the description below. Anthony's got some articles coming out. He's got the article on this topic coming out. You should check out the newsletter, completely free. And I'm not seeing any questions come in.
No. There was a comment that John MacArthur did play football back in the day. So, see, you can be a brilliant mind and athletic at the same time, contrary to what Vivek Ramaswamy thinks.
Yeah, I mean, again, in Revenge of the Nerds and also the video game Bully, the nerds are the more degenerate people, not the jocks. So, that's an interesting comment by Paul. Canadian identity as being not American is an invention from about 100 years ago. Before and during World War I, Canadian identity was firmly British, with some dissenting French Canadians and Irish migrants. Yeah, and I'm not saying that's always been their history, because I know Canada's changed over the time. But I do know their conception of national identity now is that way. So, yeah, great comment, though. Okay, I don't see anything, so let's wrap it up. My name's Ray. This is Evangelical Dark Web. If you like this kind of content, do also subscribe to the channel, to the podcast. If you are new, stay based. Christ is King, and we will catch you on the next one. And the next live stream will be the year-end review. We're going to do that on January 2nd instead of, you know, after the New Year's. But there's a couple items that will be voted on in the patrons of Evangelical Dark Web. You get to vote on some of the award categories, and you know, there's a couple more things to discuss, but that's why we're taking an extra week for this, and it allowed us to talk about this tonight instead. So this worked out great. Have a blessed day. Stay based. Christ is King. We'll catch you on the next one.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.